Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome everyone to Season 6 of Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. My name's Austin.
I'm BJ.
And this week we're talking about Dragon Quest in 2024. It's the first episode of the new year, so we always like to talk about that kind of stuff. I would also like to call this episode Sister Act 2 because we're back in the habit.
Wow. Well, that's all for me, folks. I'll see you next time.
We'll see you next week. Bye, yep. Everybody.
That's it. 40 seconds of that. That's the entire episode.
But honestly, it's been a while since we got to record and just since we've been really talking all that much because you've been on a trip.
Yeah.
So I feel like we've just kind of not gotten to talk about fun stuff too much. So how's it going?
It's good. Things are okay. We no longer have COVID, which is great. And we got back from our trip in St. Lucia, which is just paradise. Like, I love where you live, and St. Lucia is, like, even more of a just a wonderful beach, like, just amazing. Like, even, like, it's really, it reminds me a lot of the Keys and how great it was down there. Like, I just apparently love islands. Like, it's so good.
Move on down, man.
Oh, I would if it wasn't for Jennifer. If we split up, I would totally be there.
This episode is already dark.
Yep. But yeah, so like she can't because of melasma stuff. If she's ever out in the sun, even here for too much, like it happened actually at your house where she got like big discolorations on her face from the way the sun was hitting her. That it's just something about her genes, and it sucks. Like she got a little bit in St. Lucia, but she wore a hat basically all the time.
We got some interesting bits of DQ news while we were away, while you and I were both away. Square Enix announced kind of like their year-end stuff in terms of sales and what the company's doing moving forward. And there was actually quite a few tidbits of Dragon Quest in there to kind of pick apart that seemed like a good way to kick things off today. Number one is a huge win for DQ. Dragon Quest Monsters sold like unbelievably well. It was the best-selling game on Switch quite a few weeks in December, and especially impressive in a year that had like a brand new Mario game, like Mario Wonder had just come out. You had the Indigo Disc DLC for Pokemon that you would expect might sell some more copies of a game, and you had Dragon Quest Monsters that just apparently did really, really well and was like the best-selling game on Switch for December. That's great. That's fantastic. I'm very happy about that, for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected it to be the number one seller, especially right around in there. And I mean,
in Japan. I forgot to say in Japan.
Okay.
It's in Japan.
Okay, that makes more sense. Because I'm like, I know I've seen a lot of Western audiences talk about it. I've seen a lot online about it, but it being in Japan makes more sense of it being the number one game on Switch, period. But that's still a lot because, I mean, Japan loves Nintendo.
Yeah, for me it was the Mario thing because Mario Wonder, I mean, I know it came out. I know Mario Wonder was older, it came out in October, but still, you have the holidays and things like that.
Yeah.
So I guess, either way, very cool thing to kind of have happen. The other thing was that apparently Dai did terribly. If you listen to this podcast, you'll know that I was not a fan of Die when I reviewed it and found some things to still like about it, but was very critical about the way that it just made you rewatch stills from the anime and listen to voice acting and not actually get to play a game. Apparently that was the general consensus, because Die did not do so hot and was actually directly called out as a way of them needing to kind of reassess how Square Enix is pushing things out. And I guess my advice there is maybe like push out a game that you can actually play instead of just watching less good version of the anime for 15 hours.
Right.
Like, that's my thing, is it wasn't even cutscenes from the anime. It was just like the stills with the voice acting. So it was like, if you just wanted to experience the anime, just go watch the anime. Anyway, we've talked about this countless times, but really, I don't know why that game exists.
Yeah, it's like their marketing strategy, this supposedly new thing is, let's not make mid-level games, mid-budget games. I'm like, why don't you stop making mid-games?
Burn!
It's like they need to, like, I love some of these games, like, you know how much that we both love Square Enix here, but the games that they're putting out, like, it doesn't have to be a mid-budget game. It just needs to be stop making bad games. Stop greenlighting and producing games that people don't want or like. It's, and I know there's more to it than that in the business, of course, but man, you would think that somebody along the way would have seen Die in this the developmental roadmap and been like, this is a bad idea. Like, we don't need to do this.
But yeah, I think there's like so many decisions that make no sense to me.
Yeah. And there's so many levels of decisions that compound one another from different people who don't have anything to do with one another that also make games like that happen.
The other thing that we heard about over the break was that Square Enix doesn't want to rely solely on properties like Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy. They want to expand the brand, which, as you and I were talking about earlier today, is really ironic, because last year they sold off like the studios and stuff that work on like Tomb Raider, but also the studios that work on the Marvel games.
Yeah.
It's like, I know Avengers didn't do that well, and Guardians of the Galaxy was kind of meh for sales, even though critically Guardians did okay. And so, but still, I'm like,
very good game. Yeah.
I'm like, you sold Tomb Raider, one of the most like recognizable like gaming brands, and you sell off studios that are handling Marvel properties to go invest in NFTs, I might add. Like, they sold all this stuff because they were investing in NFT technology. Here we are a year later, and it's like, we wish we had other IPs. It's like, well, maybe you shouldn't have done all these bad ideas.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't have sold those for NFTs. It's like, I knew that their NFT strategy when they announced this, when it was first being talked about, was a bad idea, because NFTs are garbage. And they're worse than garbage. I can get more money for garbage than I can NFTs. And
I think it depends on the garbage.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the garbage, but I can get metal and at least go sell it. Like, I can't sell the NFTs. They're like, that's why true. Do you have this thing that I can take a screenshot of? Like, it fell apart, and it's like, that was a bad decision on its own, but why? Why they thought that to go all in and sell the studios that were making these high... these high profile IPs. I don't get it. I mean, maybe the sales weren't there. I don't know. Like, I don't know any of the like business side on why they chose those to get rid of and invest in the NFT stuff. But are they still planning on doing the NFTs? Like, I actually haven't heard anything since like the bottom fell out of that.
Yeah, I haven't either. And then now they're announcing about all their AI stuff. So I think they've just pivoted away from NFTs to AI. And then next year they'll pivot away from AI to whatever the other buzzy tech thing is that's going on at this time next year. And then none of these games will ever really get made.
They're going to call it Analog Digital Creators. And it's going to be where they have human people at keyboards typing digital things in from the real world. That's going to be the next new big thing.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I do think it sells. I mean, Avengers was a flop, and Guardians of the Galaxy commercially was, I don't want to say a flop, but it was far from a success as well. And so I think, and those were two different studios that were both under like Square Enix's umbrella. You had Eidos and Crystal Dynamics. And so
yep.
I get that they would maybe want to sell that stuff off. And then, of course, you know, Tomb Raider falls in under that stuff too. But then you just have, like, you have some other IPs that it's just, it's weird. But also, like we were talking about this morning before we recorded, like, Square kind of has a history of bad business decisions, whether it's, you know, getting Nintendo mad at them for the better half of a decade, better part of a decade in the 90s, or, like, almost bankrupting the company because of investing in weird CGI movies in the early 2000s, late 90s, and needing to get merged. And there's just, like, I mean, there's, like, a history of poor business decisions overall that we could just do, like, an entire episode on, really. So it's not necessarily, like, it's surprising, but I think the thing that keeps me coming back, you coming back, and honestly, a wide portion of anybody that plays Square Enix games is from the creative side of things. We come back because Yuji Horii is really good at telling a story and coming up with, you know, these ideas, and or Yoshi P is really good at, you know, figuring out ways to, you know, expand what an MMO is and storytelling in an MMO and things like that, where it's like you come back for the stories and the characters, and it's the creative teams there that really get people coming back despite all of these weird business decisions.
Yeah.
It does kind of mean we're in a weird place for 2024 because we know DQ12 is in development. We know the Dragon Quest III remake is in development. And I think we and pretty much everybody seems to expect the 3 remake to drop this year. Are you still thinking this year?
At this point, I don't know. I was wondering if that was going to be included actually in their mid-budget games. When they first announced it, I wondered how many of the DQ titles were going to be included in that.
I don't think any of the DQ titles. I think when you're talking about mid-level, I think probably... Have we had this conversation before? Is it because so much of my work also is like this podcast?
I think it's so much of your work. I don't think you and I have.
Okay, yeah. I think mid-level is stuff like probably, honestly, like Foam Stars, which comes out February 6th. That's like a little bit too late for cashing in on the Splatoon train.
Oh, yeah.
Like maybe some Team Asano games and stuff like Harvestella and what is that witch, the little witch game and stuff like that.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Personally sad because I feel like there's some good like innovation going on with those smaller games that fall under Square Enix's umbrella, but I get them wanting to push bigger titles, but also it's like you want to push bigger titles that aren't Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest, but you've kind of given up a lot of your other big titles. You're going to have to invent something new, a big AAA title.
Right.
And I just don't know that the corporate side of Square Enix can do that based on the kind of stuff that they're doing, like Foam Stars and even, I mean, like Power Wash Simulator. Like, I mean, that's a Square Enix game.
I forgot that.
And a successful one.
Yes, it is.
You know, I don't know. Maybe 10 years from now, Square Enix will be known for Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, Kingdom Hearts, and Power Wash Simulator. And they'll just be like 4 branches. Who knows? The future is weird.
It is.
And so, I don't know. I don't think anything that has the Dragon Quest name on it or Final Fantasy name on it is in danger here. I think that because of Die and mobile game failures that they are going to take quite a look at chugging out all these Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest things that just they've slapped the logo on it but not really paid that much attention to like quality or interest levels. I would be a little bit concerned for games that they've tried to bring back like Star Ocean, Mana, Visions of Mana, you know, comes out soon, but it was already in development, and the Valkyrie and stuff like that. Like, they've tried to bring back some properties here in the last couple of years, which I've been very appreciative of. Like, I didn't necessarily like Valkyrie Elysium was okay. I love Star Ocean 6, like, absolutely adored it. Visions of Mana looks really cool. I'm excited for that one.
Oh, cool.
But there are some games kind of like that, you know, that I would be a little bit concerned about Saga, the future of Saga stuff. And so I do think that 3 remake, despite Yuji Horii saying like 6 years ago that DQ12 would come first, I do think DQ remake is probably coming this year. I don't expect DQ12 to come in this year. We know that FF7 Rebirth is coming out at the end of February, and so Dragon Quest releases, since that would be too close together with that to hit a March release. So I think we're probably thinking like September, if I had to guess, for Dragon Quest III. I think I think the big factor here, though, is the Switch 2, whatever the Switch successor is going to be called. It's pretty much a done deal that the Switch 2 is releasing this year. At this point, I'm honestly wondering if they're just holding back DQ3 Remake for the Switch 2, because you have to think, not from a Western standpoint, but from Japan, that's a console seller right there. I mean, think about how big
it is.
Dragon Quest III was in Japan, and you slap that as one of the launch titles for the Switch 2, and it's like, I mean, that's a console seller, especially if it's not backwards compatible. And I'm thinking that it's still going to be on the regular Switch. I mean, knowing the way Nintendo kind of has done things, like looking at Wii U and Switch, you know, like Breath of the Wild was on both.
I played it on Wii U, actually. That's where I beat it.
I think we'll probably see that kind of situation. And so I've honestly been wondering if Dragon Quest III is being held for a little while. But either way, I'm thinking fall probably for this one, because after, I think Square Enix, from a business standpoint, can ride the FF7 Rebirth wave for a little while. You have 14's new expansion, Dawn Trail, coming out in summer. And so Dragon Quest III, I mean, that's a big title for every season, pretty much. As we've discussed, Square Enix business decisions don't make sense, but that would make the most sense, right? So they're probably not going to do it, but...
So it's probably not that. Yeah. So...
But seriously, Dragon Quest games, usually either like early part of the year, like March, February, March, or we're talking like later, you know, like September-ish. And so I really think that, even though the last two releases, well, not last two because of Die, but like bigger releases that aren't Die related, Treasures and Monsters 3, both were first week of December. So you never know. Dragon Quest may just pivot to being a Christmas series, which I would be fine with. I love playing Dragon Quest games over the holidays. It has become a tradition in this house.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to play something like that over the holidays. Usually it's RPG season, so it's not necessarily a Dragon Quest game, but it's something.
But, you know, there for a long time, like every holiday season, I would play, like... If not the Urgic trilogy, I would play like the first Dragon Quest game around Christmas. That was like my Christmas game. And
the
last couple of years, I haven't done that. And it's purely because, you know, Treasures came out and I was obsessed with that. And then Monsters 3 came out and I was obsessed with that. And so I've had a new Dragon Quest game to play. And if I don't this year, then I guess it's back to the good old Urgic trilogy.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly probably what it will be.
Yeah.
I can absolutely see you playing through the Urdric trilogy again.
I also think that we'll probably get some announcements in or around Dragon Quest Day this year, because since 11, at least, there's generally been multiple games that we've known about in development at any given time.
Yeah.
And right now, other than 3 and 12, there's not anything really known. So I think we might get some cool teases there. You also have to think that a Nintendo Direct is probably happening in February, because there's one like every February. So maybe we'll see a new console then. Maybe DQ3 will get an update then. I mean, they've got to have something, because they're kind of running out of Switch titles at this point, and the last one was mostly remasters to try to carry them through the first half of 2023. So I think that we'll be hearing a lot more about DQ soon.
Right.
I'm not sure what to expect, though. I mean, we've had a Monsters game now. We had Treasures, which was Monsters adjacent. I would personally love to get another Heroes game. I think that would be fantastic. But
that'd be great.
I'm not sure, but I fully expect to hear about some spinoff. I mean, there's always a DQ spinoff in development, right? Like, honestly.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, really.
I think we'll get a spinoff, but I don't know what it is yet.
I would actually like to see an improved Treasures.
Like Treasures 2 with quality of life improvements.
Yeah, really. Because I wasn't a big fan of the combat in it. That I wanted to I don't know. I guess I wanted... it never really solidified for me with having both the monsters and me fighting. That the real time just didn't work. I wish they would either make it where it was really one or the other, where it was either me doing it or the monsters doing it, and I couldn't interact. I had to do other things, but I never, the combat never gelled with me.
I like Treasure's combat fine, but a Treasure's 2 with Dragon Quest Monster 3's combat would be the winner for me, I think.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, do that. Square Enix, if you've listened this far, please do that.
If you've listened to us complain about you for the last 20 minutes, but somehow made it to this part because you're
to this point
a masochist, please make that for us. We know we said mean things earlier.
Please do that.
But we love you and make this for us.
We do love you.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's time for another Heroes game. I also feel like Builders...
that'd
did so well. Like, I'm amazed that we don't have a Builders 3 yet, despite like the primary creative source of the Builders games leaving. Like, I feel like
that's what I was about to say. I think that the team left, or the director left, right?
So yeah, the like series director, like spinoff series director, I don't know his official title, but yeah, so I think that there's lots of possibilities here, and I think we'll hear about them soon. What I would not like to see is another mobile game. And at this point, I really don't know if it's going to happen. Even with Square Enix's weird technology choices, it's just like how many mobile games, Dragon Quest or otherwise, but like honestly, how many mobile games do you have to put out and then close down, you know, before you start getting the hint that it's not working? And I think a part of that is what I think of as the Dollar General strategy, which
yeah.
I think I've told you, but I don't think I've ever brought it up in the podcast.
Yep.
So years and years ago, my wife, she worked at Dollar General. She was a manager of Dollar General. But there was a Dollar General's whole strategy is like you put them everywhere, knowing good and well that you're going to have to close down like a third of them. But the whole like strategy is to just put them everywhere. And then, because most of them will probably work, and then you just cut your losses and take out the rest of them. But if you get in, essentially like a disease, then you can get out things like Walmart and Kroger, whatever, Publix, wherever you live, things like that. And I think that's kind of Square Enix's strategy with mobile games. It's that Dollar General strategy, where it's like they just throw like 10 things at the wall, and they know that like 3 or 4 of them are going to fall off really fast. And that even more will fall off in a few years, but there's probably going to be 1 or 2 like Brave Exvius that like sticks around, you know, and that they can keep having as a cash cow. And so maybe that's worth it from a business standpoint. It must be, since a lot of companies do that kind of thing.
It must be. They keep doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you say that about Dollar General's running out Walmarts. You remember in Loretto, that Dollar General, they added 2, the one in St. Joe, then one in Loretto, and then they made the Walmart neighborhood market they put in close?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that may be where you got it from, but it's like, yeah, that actually happens. Like, that's not even hyperbole.
Oh, no, I know that's how it happens, because I remember Grace explaining that all to me in her, like, corporate meetings.
Oh yeah, I meant for everybody else, like listening, like that is absolutely like not even, that's from real life experience what they do. Yeah, like that's not just conjecture like the way we do about other stuff. Like, we know that's the strategy.
Yeah, for sure. In the meantime, though, we have Monsters to enjoy, which I know you're very, very close to beating.
Yep, I thought I was going to beat it by this point, that and then I wasn't in the level I thought I was. I actually have one more area to go. I thought I was right on near the last dungeon before it moved into other stuff. And then when I got through that, it was like, by the way, you got this other world. I'm like, dang it, I forgot. I thought I counted wrong. So, meh.
You're on the, after talking with you, you're on the very last one. So you're right there.
I think so.
Either way, for people listening who are like, get back to the Dragon Quest Monster stuff. That'll be next week, so just bear with us. We're waiting for BJ to beat it, because we'll probably do a final, like, spoilery,
I think.
Well, spoilery, but I was like, spoilers-ery? Kind of episode, and then it is season 6, so We plan on doing deep dive episodes on Dragon Quest VI this year, which I'm really looking forward to because I love Dragon Quest VI, and you haven't played it, and we have decided, we didn't mention this before, but we decided when we were talking a while back that we're going to like play it together, and I'm really excited for that. Like, honestly, I really am.
Right.
Whenever I was playing it way back when, it was like I would tell you things about it, and there'd be people who played it already who were telling me things about it, but I wasn't just like playing it along somebody the way you would like, like, you know, like playing Dragon Quest Monsters or like back when Builders 2 first came out, you know, and everything. It was like we both got it the same day and we're both playing along with each other and getting to around the same places at any given time. And that was just a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to it because I also... I've not replayed Dragon Quest VI, even though I love it. I have not gone back and replayed Dragon Quest VI. And so, yeah, I don't know if I'll do the post game this time because I honestly can't even remember if I finished the post game of DQ6 last time. I remember we did an episode about it way back when in season one because I was on that around the time we started the podcast. And I was talking about like Nocturnus and everything and doing post game. But the post game is beefy, so I don't know if I'll do that, but definitely plan on replaying through the whole main story, and also hearing your thoughts about it because that's one that took a little took a little while for me to get into. But then once the job system opened up and you had access to all the vocations,
right?
To borrow a phrase, I was like, "Hot dog,
hot dog!
Let's do this."
I look forward to playing it. It's one that I've only ever played the very beginning of and never gotten far into. So I'm really looking forward to doing it. I'm going to do the DS version like you and I had talked about before.
Yeah. It'll be interesting too because like we've seen with Monsters, there's stuff that like I've really had trouble with that you just breeze through. And then there's stuff that you're having trouble with that I breeze through. And there were some moments in DQ6 where I got lost or didn't know where to go or whatever. And so I'll be interested in seeing if you're just like, you know, if you go from A to B to C and you're like, no, dude, how'd you get lost here? Meanwhile, Austin from like 2019 was like, wait, I don't know where to go.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, at least it's not like Austin from like 2018 where like all it was trying to find that one place in the ocean in DQ2.
Oh my gosh.
Where like there were like 3 days of like text and like I think it feels like it was 3 days. Like I can't remember specifically, but it was like all of these like screenshots and messages like, dude, I'm gonna lose my mind.
That was a rough thing. Yeah, that might be the
it
worst.
It was like, yeah, that's
like time I've ever had with a video game, and I'm still convinced it was a bug because I didn't do anything new. It's just I went to that spot like the 15th time and the treasure was out there and I was like, okay, well, why didn't this happen before? So I'm convinced because that was a real pain in the butt. If you don't know what we're talking about, I will shamelessly plug, there's an episode from season one about Dragon Quest II. And we go into this extensively, so you can just listen to like a 45-minute rant about all the problems I had with that sunken treasure. But
you've beat it since then and never had that problem, right?
Yes, correct. But actually,
I don't know what it was.
That was Switch, though. That was the Switch. I mean, it was the same version of the game, but it was on Switch.
Game,
it wasn't on mobile, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you did. Oh, yeah, you should go back and play 2 on mobile this year.
Should I? Should I, though?
Do it. Yeah, do it.
Do it.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out. But anyway, thank you guys so much for catching up with us in 2024. And if you want to talk to us individually, you can find us on Twitter or Blue Sky at Dragon Quest FM. And you can also chat with us on Patreon at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM. If you want to talk to me directly, you can find me on all those places at Dragon Quaston.
And I'm mostly on Twitter and Threads at Professor Beej, BJ Keaton on Blue Sky. And remember, we have a Patreon, and you can support the podcast at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM.
Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.